Good evening. It's Sunday, October 17th, 2021. Coming up, Pastor Kenny Glasgow, the half-brother of Reverend Al Sharpton, is heading back to court for a sentencing hearing after being indicted on drug charges. This is happening, ironically, during National Substance Abuse Awareness Month. How does stigma get in the way of formerly incarcerated people getting the support they need when facing relapse?
I had to really learn me and be like, hey, you can't do this like you think you can. And it's not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength.
Many preschools in the East Bay have record-setting wait lists as they struggle to keep teachers inside the classroom.
It is many minorities like myself, a Mexican immigrant, who are going through the struggle of providing the best child care for a more affluent community.
National Coming Out Day happened on Monday. While much progress has been made with spreading LGBTQ+ rights and awareness, some say there's still work to be done in promoting acceptance.
On something as innocuous as us putting up signs that say all are welcome here, there was a news story done on it and a ton of disgusting homophobic comments on the local news station page.
I'm Sharon Sabota, and this is the KPFA Weekend Evening News. October is both National Substance Abuse Awareness and Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Of the 2.2 million incarcerated Americans, nearly half are being held on drug-related charges. The American Addiction Center suggests that as many as 85% of those struggling with addiction will at some point relapse. Those who've been incarcerated for drug-related charges sometimes end up at halfway houses at places like 111 Taylor in San Francisco, where drugs are abundant on the streets, which many say makes them susceptible to relapse and reincarceration. Others, like Pastor Kenny Glasgow, the half-brother of Reverend Al Sharpton, who founded the Ordinary People Society after being released from serving a decade and a half in prison for charges related to his drug addiction, say the stress and pressure of life, combined with the stigma and shame of addiction, have been real obstacles in seeking out support.
I never admitted it to nobody. It actually came out after I got another possession charge. And the DA, I'll never forget, he was sitting there telling my daughter, like, you know, people that are addicted and this and that and the other, you know, when they have addictions, you know, they hide it and don't want to. My father's not an addict, you know, and I'm sitting there looking at her on the TV screen crying like, man, you know, my daughter and everybody's defending me, but don't nobody really realize I'm using.
Yeah.
And I couldn't admit it to anybody because I'm still a preacher. Yeah. I couldn't admit it to anybody because I'm still the leader of the South. I couldn't admit it to anybody because I was so shamed and so caught up.
Kenneth Glasgow was indicted in August on drug charges, and he'll be returning to court this month for a sentencing hearing. Since founding TOPS, the Ordinary People Society, Glasgow has been a fierce advocate for helping formerly incarcerated people reintegrate into society and for getting voting access to those who are still behind bars. While doing this work to support others, Glasgow found that he slipped back into using drugs and was too ashamed to get support. I spoke with Glasgow about the life circumstances that led him to turn to drugs in the first place, about how he relapsed, and about what needs to be done to support Americans struggling with addiction so that they can get support in the free world and avoid reincarceration.
I couldn't ever really be in the place I was talking to nobody about it till I got to the 80s. So I got another charge, and they sent me to what's called the Haven. They sent me to treatment. It was mandatory.
And when was that?
That was last August.
August 2020.
2020, yeah.
Okay, keep going.
And that's when...
Glasgow says it took mandatory rehab for him to come to terms with having a relapse.
I met this lady, Miss Anna, very young white lady. And I was like, what this little girl, man, what is she going to tell me? She ain't never been through nothing. She don't know nothing about drugs. She don't know nothing about life. Don't know nothing about nobody being locked up. And the woman asked me a question, the leader over him, the director, oh my God. She was like, you're not the pastor here. You're not national figure here. You're not Kenny, big time Kenny Glasgow here. You're Kenny. And what you're going to concentrate on while you're here is Kenny. You're not going to save anybody here. You're not going to minister to nobody here. You're Kenny. I was like, man, this is going to be a trip. How I'm not going to be me, this, that, and the other. This is what I've been doing 20 years of my life since I got out of prison in 2001, 7 years in prison since 1994 until 2001 when I got out. How you gonna tell me not to be me? And I got in the room with the counselor, Ms. Anna, and she asked me something that I had never been asked before. She said, who is Kid in Glasgow? And I told her, I said, well, I changed 14 laws in Alabama and 3 laws in Georgia and 2 laws in Florida where they could vote. It was the first one to get a hate crime conviction in West Virginia with the Megan Williams case and helped change the laws in Mississippi where they could vote out of prison and jail. And she said, okay, oh, that's great. God bless. Oh, man, you did a lot of wonderful things. Now, that's what you did.
Who are you?
I said, well, I'm Kenny Glasgow. I'm Al Sharpton's brother and I'm Tina Glasgow's son. And you know, I got these nub fingers. I was born like this. Now, she said, well, we're getting a little better, but who are you? I'll never forget, Sharon. I broke down because I couldn't answer. The pastor, I'm this. She said, okay, those types. But who are you? And I cried because I had became everything to be that leader, but I had lost me. That's when I finally admitted I had relapsed.
The first step of recovery for Glasgow, he says, was coming to terms with who he was.
For the first time in 20 years, I couldn't have the phone. You know, the 2 weeks in jail, okay? But I'm in the free world. I'm in treatment. But y'all tell me I can't use the phone. I can't call nobody. No, we need you to concentrate on you. And she gave me this package of books. And it was all these different questions about me. And it took me 2 weeks, man, to answer those questions honestly about who I was. I would always answer who I had become, what I did, what I accomplished. But it was so hard to answer who I was. And that's when treatment started. That's when I really became the person that started TOPS in 1994. And I really got back in touch with me and started to recognize who I was and not what I had become, what I had accomplished, what somebody had done to me, what my hurt was, what my pain was. And I was able to leave there with a holistic different point of view of me.
Glasgow says in order to heal, he had to let go of things that had become his identity.
I let running the organization go. I let everything go. And it was amazing because when I went in at that particular time, we had about maybe $300,000-$400,000. And when I came out, it was over $1 million. They had been accomplished all this, you know, Rodriguez and all them running the organization had did. And that's one of the major things that I learned while I was in treatment, that, you know, the world is not going to stop if I'm not there. TOPS is not going to stop if I'm not there. God used me to find it, to build it, but he didn't necessarily need me to continue it. And that's when I really got back in touch with me. And I got so engrossed and in embedded in helping others and being a sacrificial lamb to others to where I sacrificed myself so much, I lost myself.
Yeah, that's a lot of, I can see you've done a lot of self digging. I can hear it. I can see it.
Yeah. So I had to really learn me and be like, hey, you can't do this like you think you can. And it's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. And then the biggest thing with me is I had to get delivered from people. When you have a person like me that feel like their best death is being a martyr, a person like me that feel like my best thing I could offer is my whole self and be a sacrificial lamb, not realizing that Jesus already died on the cross. I ain't got to die and be crucified, but I felt like that.
After having multiple run-ins with the law and experiencing incarceration several times, Glasgow says he's still never able to fully let his guard down.
I don't sleep because I think every time a leaf falls outside, I think they're coming to get me. I think every time my dog bark, is them outside coming to get me. So I'm looking at myself. Like, you know, I'm at the window. Like, you know, you ever seen the picture of Malcolm X when he's standing at the window watching? That's the way I am, like, all through the night, you know? So I don't sleep.
So if you were going to give yourself the same ministry that you've offered to everybody, and you had to think about what could society do to support a person like you who struggles with addiction, who's human, what do you wish for?
What I particularly wish would happen now I really can't see it coming from the criminal justice system at this point, especially here in the South. We need more healing circles. We need to concentrate on more healing and look at, over the years, all the things that have affected us.
Do you remember what was happening in your life the first time that you
The first time I used, I was about 25, 26 years old, and I was dealing with my birth. I had never got over that, never got over the different things that I went through growing up.
Glasgow says drugs helped him cope with things like domestic violence, and they were normalized by a step-parent who also struggled with substance abuse.
Just a lot of different things happened. I don't want to tell my mother's story, but I lived through a lot of domestic violence on my mother. I went through a lot of, I don't want to say displacement, but we had to move a few times and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm Al Sharpton's half-brother. And that's a whole nother story that we'll get into later on that now. And so I had to deal with a lot of different stuff growing up that when I got older, I had to face. And I used drugs to medicate. And that's how I got addicted on drugs.
So then it became a coping strategy. And it's all rooted in trauma, right? Sounds like you had to witness domestic violence. You had to do a fair amount of moving. And so struggle was part of your roots, it sounds like.
Exactly. And so that's the way we used to medicate it. And, you know, I had a good stepdad, but he used. And he drug alcohol. To the point that where he had to go in the hospital 3 or 4 times to get his stomach pulled. There's a whole bunch of mitigating circumstances that put me in that position, right?
What needs to happen to make it possible for a person like you to not relapse, to stay on course?
I need to go to some kind of rehab and really get some help. And hopefully it'll be a structure like the Haven to where they could really get some help and get in touch with themselves. I think that if a person with me, I can't speak for anybody else. It took me getting back to me and learning me. And because I had really covered myself in the work so much that I didn't know me.
And so for you, for part of your day-to-day now, do you have like a support group structure or how do you stay clean?
Oh, yes, most definitely. I got a sponsor. I got people I surround myself with. That's in recovery. You know, I got so wrapped up in the church and wrapped up in the work that I had stopped all that. You know, I'm good. and come to the realization that I was. So the most important lesson that I say that I learned as of today is to stay with the basics and not lose yourself. You know, one of the things that I would say to anybody and any leader is that you have to heal yourself. You can't stay in this fight and keep fighting without taking time to heal your wound. Okay? That's one. The second type thing I would want to say is don't lose yourself in work. Remember you.
That's Kenneth Glasgow, the founder of the Ordinary People Society. Glasgow will be returning to court for a sentencing hearing next week. You're listening to the Weekend Evening News on KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. The pandemic caused many people to reimagine where and how they should live and brought an influx of children and families from cities to suburbs. These transitions are creating some pressing logistical challenges to preschools in the East Bay, where the wait lists are much larger than the capacity of the schools, and in some cases, where there simply aren't enough credentialed teachers willing to step into or stay inside the classroom. Maria Rios is the director of St. John's Preschool in Orinda. The preschool is at its capacity of 48, and she says there are many others eager to get in.
We have an incredible busy waiting list for all of our classrooms. I get a sense that there's like this boom of families moving into the La Mirinda area from cities like Oakland and San Francisco, because I feel like the timing is off, but they're like, oh, we have a 2-year-old and we're just moving to the area, or, you know, we moved 2 months ago and we didn't realize how difficult childcare was going to be, kind of thing. So we have a very busy waiting list for everybody. for all the classrooms.
So another center told me they have like 100 people on the waiting list, and then they have another waiting list for the waiting list. Are you in a similar situation, or do you have dozens?
In a similar situation, yeah, because, you know, we do give priority to siblings, right? We even have a waiting list for sibling priority right now.
With some creative planning, Rio's is, at least for the moment, fully staffed.
Our former cook, when she first started, and I always do this with whoever's in the kitchen, I highly recommended that she started taking some classes. And so she listened, thank goodness, because I always said, would being in the classroom be something that you would want to pursue? Would you rather be a teacher versus a cook? And she's like, well, yeah, I'd be open to being a teacher as well. And I said, well, I highly recommend that you start taking some classes. So I referred her to a counselor at DVC, and she was able to get some help on, you know, what classes to get. And so she had started a year ago. And thank goodness she was ready to be in the classroom when one of our teachers gave notice. And thank goodness that she was ready to jump in full-time, because she was also working part-time. And so that worked out really nicely.
Soledad Lascon is the cook-turned-teacher that Rio speaks of.
I've been working in the restaurant industry like for 13 years. And we own two of the Mexican restaurants in Martinez, Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, I decided to move on. And because I have a 2-year-old boy, I got pregnant, and when my baby was born, I stopped working like for a while. And then when I decided to go back, I kind of thought about it, going back to the restaurant or like moving to some different career.
You got there and you started working with children, and did you like it more than you expected?
I did. I do. I do. Yeah.
So then you kind of made a career shift, right?
Yes, I did, totally.
And what's the most rewarding part of doing that?
Well, so far, it's like you just get so much bonding and attached to the kids that now it's kind of funny that even on the weekend, I kind of miss them. So it's, and just to be there with them, you know?
That's sweet. And does your own child go to preschool there as well?
He's actually on the waiting list, maybe by March.
I asked Rios how many of the staff in her preschool live in the community they serve.
You know, every time I tour and I say, you know, welcome to the community, I wish I could afford it, right? I mean, the school districts are amazing, but renting or buying a house in this area is completely out of my league. And I'm certainly not in the field for the love of the money, right? Because it's not getting me to that goal. But I certainly love my job. I'm also very thankful and blessed to be part of a parent and teacher and just part of a community that is very supportive. I am very thankful of my staff, because I feel like that's one of the things that makes us really unique. Most of us have been here for many years. I'm going on my 19th year. I taught for 14, and I have been directing for 5. Another of my teachers is going on her 21st year of working here. So there's several of us who've been here more than 12 years. So we've created this like community of family in the workplace that is very, I like to call it priceless, because it really is. I mean, we have our good days and our bad days, but all in all, we're very supportive of each other. But on the money topic, I know that we're not doing it for the money. And, you know, we wish that we could get more or give more, but it's certainly limited, for sure.
So you're the director, and you also don't live in this community. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
That's exactly right. And I wish I could afford it, but I can't. I don't. I don't live in this community. And nothing would make me more happy, because I know that, you know, the school districts in the area are just phenomenal. And, I mean, I would love for my son to be a part of this district, but I can't afford it.
And where do you drive in from every day?
I'm commuting from Martinez.
And how about your staff? Where are they coming in from?
I have a couple from Richmond, a couple from Pittsburgh or Bay Point, and then one from, I believe it's Hercules.
How many of your staff are from La Mirinda?
None.
Okay, I just really wanted to underscore that point because I want people to think about who it is that's taking care of their children and who it is that's doing this really important labor.
People of color are having to struggle so much more, and we think we've evolved from all these issues, but I truly feel that we're far away from it. I've never felt unappreciated in this community. I would be ungrateful if I said I wasn't, but it's such a great point that you make, and that it's important to put out there that yes, indeed, in fact, it is many minorities like myself, a Mexican immigrant, who are going through the struggle of providing the best child care for a more affluent community.
In the community where Lasco and Rios work, there's one below market rate apartment listing at the rate of $1,100 per month for those who earn less than $47,000 per year. While the apartment manager indicates that there are no immediate below market rate openings at this time, there are immediate openings at the regular rate of $4,400. Preschool site directors say until the affordable housing issue is addressed to a level that allows caregivers to live in the communities they serve, they will continue to scramble to keep centers staffed and running smoothly. Monday, October 11th, marked National Coming Out Day. I spoke with a business owner who happens to be a mother of a 6-year-old trans-identifying child and a member of what she calls a rainbow family.
I am Katie Bushman. I'm the owner of String Theory Studio, which is a crafting store and dance studio combination in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin.
And there's definitely an interesting vibe in your store. Like, I noticed a lot of LGBTQIA-friendly things. Also, there's signs that you've made saying hate has no home here in Wisconsin. Talk about kind of the inspiration for
your product line.
Absolutely. So we obviously live in a small town in Wisconsin, and while there are a ton of people who are really progressive and supportive and wonderful here, there is still a lot of the throwbacks to homophobia, racism, sexism, all of that, that we are still dealing with in this town. There actually was a claim against our school district from the ACLU because of some of the actions of the students in this district. And
which is your school district?
Oh, sorry, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. And the Chippewa Falls School District has an ACLU complaint against them currently about some of the things that have happened to students in the school and the school's lack of response. But in a grander sense, there have been actions taken in our community against certain members of our community. There was an incident which inspired the signs where there were a couple teenagers who were harassing a local couple who is wonderful, and they are huge community advocates, and they are just fantastic people. And so we decided, my wife and I decided, that instead of responding to hate with more hate, we were going to do something to mark safe spaces in our community and to show love and support for our fellow LGBTQ members, but also to everyone in our community who is feeling marginalized. So we created the signs. One says all are welcome here, and it has the progressive flag in the background, and the other says hate has no home here. And both of them have Wisconsin logos with the rainbow inside of it. I know there were pages on pages in this complaint against the Chippewa Falls School District of different students who have had interactions like this and haven't had any action brought against the offenders. In a larger sense, there's a lot of harassment that happens in the community, even on something as innocuous as us putting up signs that say all are welcome here. There was a news story done on it and a ton of disgusting homophobic comments on the local news station page. While people like to think of LGBTQ and groups like that as a minority, we're really not. There's a ton of us in this community. We deserve to be here just as much as anyone else. And also, everyone deserves to be here. We all have a place in this community, and really there's just too much negativity going out there towards minority groups, or what people consider minority groups, and underrepresented groups. So,
and in this store, I've noticed my children found it because of the jewelry and then the pretty colors, and then we saw some of the signs that were showing that diversity is a welcome and promoted thing here, and that drew us in, and it seems like this shop is filled with allies.
Absolutely. We are so grateful for the, I mean, we obviously have the progressive line in our flag and signs in our windows, and I think it has brought all the right people into our store. We are so grateful for finding those allies in the community and seeing how much love and support everyone has here. And I love that our store has been marked a safe space. We had a booth at Pride Fest, and we got to meet so many amazing community members, and I'm going to get all teary, but we have a child who's non-binary, and seeing those kids feel loved and supported and represented, and knowing that there are other people in this community who love and support them, was worth more than anything we could have sold at that show. Just seeing the joy on their faces was worth it. So
I've got chills because I'm feeling like this mom energy and the joy of having something recognized and honored in your own child. But that was my next question. A lot of the jewelry here says this is made by Elle, and Elle uses they them pronouns. Would you like to tell us a little bit about Elle?
Oh yeah, so Elle is one of our 6-year-olds. We have four kids total. We have two sixes and a 10. And we like to joke we're a little rainbow family. Our oldest is bi. My wife is trans. I am bi. And our 6-year-old is non-binary. So they have been wanting to dress up like their siblings or like their sisters since they were probably 2 years old. They have always loved everything sparkly and wonderful. And as they have gotten older and we've introduced books about different gender identities and different pronouns and terminology, they have found the terms that they feel fit them the most. And so they told us last year that they are non-binary and that they are gender fluid, which we fully support.
And how does a 6-year-old say that?
I think if you give kids the language and you show them the support, they can tell you exactly who they are and who they want to be. And I've actually been reading a lot of books from therapists and specialists who specifically focus on gender identity. And the more creative freedom you give your child, the more beautifully they'll spin their gender web, and they will show you who they are and who they want to be. And you just have to give them the space to do that and the support.
Bushman says the pandemic has been particularly challenging for her family.
2020 was crazy for everyone, but I feel like it was a little extra crazy for us. My wife came out shortly before the pandemic as transgender. Then the world shut down a couple months later, and I got a cancer diagnosis 3 months into the pandemic. I had my third surgery of the year, and I'm going into another year of chemo. My kids were all home because it wasn't safe to send them back to school while I was doing chemotherapy. So we've just kind of like powered through, and we just keep finding ways to make it work.
And what's the most important lesson you've learned on this gigantic journey of yours?
Just to be flexible. Everything from foster care to parenting to owning a studio now to the cancer diagnosis and my wife's transition. If you can be flexible and be willing to adjust your sails and change with things, then I think everything is more manageable.
I spoke with Bushman's 6-year-old non-binary child, Elle.
I'm 6 and my name is Ellen.
Ellen?
Mm-hmm.
And what pronouns do you use?
They, them.
And what does that mean to you?
Good.
Oh, that's good, because that's who you are. And talk about the jewelry that you make that's in the store.
I make jewelry. I make keychains, earrings, bracelets, and necklaces.
And what's your favorite thing about doing that?
It's because I get to have a lot of fun, and I get to share my cool stuff I make with everyone.
And what's the most special thing about your family?
Because they all love me and they care about me.
They all love you and they care about you? Anything else you want to say?
Thank you. Goodbye.
And the weather. In the San Francisco Bay Area, cloudy tonight with a chance of rain. Sunny tomorrow with highs in the low 60s. In the Fresno area, partly cloudy with lows in the mid 50s tonight. Sunny tomorrow with highs in the mid 60s. That's it for this evening's news. Thanks to Miko Talavar, who's at the controls, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in.
I'm Sharon Sabota.
Have a beautiful evening.